way. Yes, Owen was brave. He was alone in the world now, so he needed to be. If he could find protection at the sanctuary, then it was well worth the risk. They would look for him in the kitchen. They would look for him all over the grounds, but they would not find him quickly enough to stop him. Owen steeled his courage, feeling his legs wobble with the pent-up excitement. Then he slipped through the crack in the door, gently shut it behind him, and raced toward freedom.
The populace of Ceredigion is inherently superstitious, especially in regards to quaint traditions involving the fountain. When there is a wish or an ambition that a husband, wife, or child wants fulfilled, they hold a coin in their hand, think hard on the wish, and then flick the coin into one of the multitude of fountains within the sanctuary of Our Lady. Coins glisten and shimmer beneath the waters. They return the next day and find the coin still there, mayhap 2 days. But invariably the coins vanish, and that poor soul believes the fountain has accepted their offering and will consider their wish. I know for a fact that the sexton of Our Lady dons wading boots, grabs a rake, and harvests the coins for the king's coffers every few days. He always leaves some behind, for a partially full fountain invites more donations to the king's treasury. It is considered the height of blasphemy to steal a coin from a fountain. It amazes me how this superstition prevents even a hungry urchin from stealing a coin that would buy his bread. The children whisper that if you take from the fountain and are caught, you will be thrown into the river and whisked over the falls. The power that tradition wields over simple minds is truly amazing. Whenever some poor fool shows a natural talent, be it baking or growing flowers, how quick people are to announce that person as blessed.
Dominique Mancini, Espion of Our Lady of King Fountain. Chapter 8. Her Majesty. Owen was breathing hard by the time he left the woods and started down the road. Sweat slicked his hair to his forehead, and he joined the carts and wagons and torrent of folk marching along toward the bridge. He worried that he would be spotted by the guards and seized at the gate, so he searched the crowd for a group of people who looked like a family. As soon as he found one, he increased his speed and fell in step with them as they passed the gatehouse. No one paid him any notice. After leaving the shadow of the portcullis, Owen felt his nervous heart begin to give way to a thrill of excitement. Mona was probably still searching for him, and even after she reported him missing, it would take time before anyone figured out how he had escaped. His plan was simple. Go to the princess's mother in the sanctuary of Our Lady and beg enough coins to hire a coach to take him back to Tatton Hall. He knew of dozens of places he could hide on the grounds without his parents' knowledge, and he would live among them as a ghost. It was a 3-day ride by horseback to West March, which meant a wagon would take longer, but the thought of being back home in a week made him grin with eagerness. He would trick the king, and no one would be the wiser. Not even his parents would know where he was, so it would not be their fault if Owen was missing. He was still hurt that they had chosen him to go to the palace, but he didn't want them to get in more trouble. As he crossed the bridge, his confidence began to wane, and his stomach started to growl. He broke off a crust from his pocket and chewed it slowly to ease his hunger. Every noise made him whirl around and stare back, as if 20 knights wearing the badge of the White Boar might be charging after him. Beneath him, he could feel the churn of waves crashing against the bridge and hear the roar of the waterfall. He feared he would never make it, and yet the sanctuary drew closer. It was a beautiful structure, but he had gazed at it with dull eyes when Horwath had brought him past it weeks ago. Still, he remembered all the grubby men loitering at the gates and felt a shiver of dread. The clomp of hooves startled him, and he moved to the side quickly as a rider passed. Owen felt the panicked sensation that everyone was looking at him. He refused to meet anyone's gaze as he pressed onward. As he walked, he took notice of the brickwork along the island wall that defended the earth from being washed away. There were patterns in the bricks he had not noticed before.
perhaps because huge clumps of hanging ivy covered part of the brickwork, one batch hanging low enough to tease the waters rushing by at great speed. A fence surrounded the entire grounds of the sanctuary, which was on the north side of the island in the midst of the river. Huge trees towered up beyond the fence, and on the side facing Owen, he spied a huge circular stained-glass window in the shape of a sundial. Spikes and turrets rose from the edges, and long gutters and support struts held up the walls. It was narrow and tall, and a huge steeple jutted from the crown of the structure, high enough to pierce the clouds. Owen was so busy gazing at the structure that he stumbled against the backside of a man pushing a cart, and earned a quick scolding for his carelessness. After crossing the bridge onto the island, Owen bent his way toward the main gates. Sure enough, there were feckless men loitering there. Owen mustered his courage and walked through the gates, feeling a jolt of relief once he had passed them. No man could force him from these grounds. Not even the king. None of the fountain men, who were muttering among themselves, paid him any mind. Owen gazed at the tall posts with lamps dangling from hooks high above. There were families walking the inner parks, and his heart grew sore at the sight of them. He hungered to see his family again, even from afar. And to calm himself, he reflected on where he would hide first when he returned to his estate. There was a large reflection pool before the steps leading up to the sanctuary doors, which were open, revealing a sunlit entryway. He stopped at the pool, staring into the placid depths, and saw coins gleaming in the bottom. A fat man sat on the edge of the pool, beefy arms folded. He was tossing crumbs to pigeons pecking near his shoes. Owen watched with fascination as the man deftly sprinkled the crumbs, sometimes this way, sometimes that, and the crowd of feathers moved in response, making clucking and cooing noises all the while. The fat man smiled at their squabbling. Then suddenly the man lurched to his feet and stomped, causing the birds to flap and flee in a cloud of exploding gray plumage. The sudden motion shocked Owen, and his heart hammered frightfully in his chest. The fat man laughed boisterously, clutching his girth as he sat back down. He wiped his eyes a moment, still chuckling to himself, and then dug into a pocket for more crumbs and began sprinkling them again on the paving stones. Sure enough, pigeons began to return a few moments later, flapping down from the trees where they'd fled. They approached cautiously, heads bobbing, and then the braver ones began to peck at the crumbs. Once they did, the others deemed it safe enough, and soon the entire area was thick with fowl again. The fat man had scraggly brown whiskers along his jowls, his hair was thick and wavy, cropped close to his ears, and he had a sad smile, as if he were bored beyond his wits, and tormenting the birds was his only way of entertaining himself.
"They keep coming back," the fat man said with a tired sigh.
He had not looked at Owen, but his voice was pitched just enough to reach the boy's ears. He had the accent of a foreigner, but his voice was pleasant, and he spoke the tongue of the kingdom well.
"I can frighten them off 100 times a day. But they keep coming back for crumbs,"
he sighed, resting his bread-throwing hand on his paunch.
"They cannot resist their need to eat, and I suppose neither can I. It's a sad truth. If I were not so lazy, I would walk over to the muffin vendor and get a tasty morsel. Those would provide tantalizing crumbs indeed. But when you haul around this much baggage, lad, even a little walk is a burden."
Owen stared at the man's mouth as he talked, watching the way he formed his words. He had a gentle, coaxing voice. Then he glanced at Owen and smiled in a friendly way.
"Here to make a wish, lad?"
he asked. Owen blinked, realizing he was formally being addressed. He nodded sheepishly. The man pitched his voice lower.
"They say that side of the pool brings better luck."
He pointed to the other side of the reflecting pool from where he sat.
"But if you really want a wish granted, You must toss a crown into the wisdom fountain inside. The statue of the woman with the spear is the true lady of the fountain. She'll grant your wish, if you have a whole crown.
I don't have a crown, Owen said. The man pursed his lips.
Well, that can't be. A lad with such a noble look. I thought you'd have a whole bag of crowns. 'Tis a pity. But if your wish is important, that's where you must make it. Here, I'll lend you a crown.
He dug through another pouch, humming a little to himself, and pulled out a fat crown. He put it under his thumb and flicked it, sending the coin spinning in the air toward Owen, who caught it without dropping it.
Well done, lad, well done, the fat man said.
Owen stared at the crown and saw it was not from Ceredigion. A different language was scrawled on it, and it looked nothing like the coins from his realm. He rubbed his fingers over the letters and spelling he couldn't decipher.
Can you read it? The fat man asked, chuckling.
Owen shook his head, turning the coin over in his hand.
Not many from these parts can. That is called a florin. It's about the same weight as a crown. I'm Genovese. The Lake Kingdom. Do you know where that is, lad?
Owen stared at the man. He had never met a foreigner before. I've seen maps, he said shyly.
The man nodded. Maps? You looked like a smart one. I bet you can read and know your numbers, too.
Owen looked at him in surprise.
I knew it,
the man said, chuckling and clapping his hands. The birds pecking near his feet were getting angry that he hadn't put any crumbs down in a while.
Well, there is your crown, lad. Go make your wish and run along to your mother.
Thank you, Owen said, surprised that he wasn't too shy to speak. The man had a way about him that both frightened Owen and intrigued him. He was not like other adults.
Name is Mancini, the fat man said with a nod.
Thank you, Mancini, Owen said.
Someone in your family is sick. Is that why you're making a wish? What was your name again?
Owen, the boy replied. Only then realizing he should not have said it. He blinked with surprise.
Well met, Owen, Mancini said. Go make your wish. I think I might fetch that muffin after all.
He groaned and tried to rise, but it seemed to require more effort than he had to give.
Sometimes, Mancini said, breathing hard. I have to lean back before I can push myself up again. Once I leaned back too far and splash went into the fountain.
He gave Owen a wink and a grin and the boy giggled.
Took 4 men to pull me out. What a mess. Almost drowned.
Owen smiled, enjoying the warmth that came with the laughter. The image of the fat man flailing and spluttering in the water made it even funnier. Mancini leaned back and then swung himself forward. This time he made it back up to his feet, tottering a bit, and Owen watched him as he waddled away. Once the fat man was gone, Owen walked around to the other side of the pool. He made a wish that the queen would be able to help him, and then pitched the florin into the water, where it plopped and promptly sank to the bottom. He started to walk around the grounds a bit more, admiring the fountains and searching for the princess's mother. He thought the best place to look would be within the sanctuary itself, so he mounted the wide stone steps. The floor of the sanctuary was made of black and white marble squares, reminding him of an enormous wiser board, but without the pieces. He loved playing wiser, and even though he was only 8, he was good enough to beat some of his siblings. His father still bested him every time. Owen stood on a white square, which was just wide enough for him to fit in without his feet touching the edges. The hall was enormous, and a huge fountain splashed and played in the middle of the chamber. There were higher-ranking visitors inside the sanctuary, as demonstrated by their stylish clothes and felt hats. Owen felt a little more comfortable now, and the effect of the fountain was soothing. There were tall columns and pedestals topped with white marble statues, which looked to Owen like life-size wiser pieces. Of course, they would be very difficult to move. Not surprisingly, he saw some older men sitting around normal-size wiser boards and playing matches. He walked among them, looking for a woman who resembled the princess. It took quite some wandering before he managed to find her, but the time seemed to pass quickly. The princess's mother was talking to the sanctuary sexton, a man with white robes, a black cloak, and a mushroom-shaped hat. The sexton was in charge of the grounds. The Deconius was in charge of performing the water rite for newborn babies. Owen had been around such people his entire life, so he recognized them by their robes. But Owen easily recognized the princess's mother. This was the Queen Dowager, the wife of the king who had died 2 years before. She was trailed by a younger woman, probably no more than 12, who looked to be her other daughter. Owen waited patiently until the Queen Dowager's conversation with the sexton was finished, although it took quite a while. Once they were done, the Queen Dowager took the girl's hand, and the two of them slowly walked back toward the fountain in the center of the huge chamber. Recognizing his opportunity, Owen quickly walked up to her, trying to quell his growing nervousness. As he walked, the girl holding her mother's hand looked at him curiously and tugged on her mother's arm. It felt as if a cloud of butterflies had filled Owen's stomach. The Queen Mother stopped, responding to the tugging, and turned to face Owen. She was a beautiful woman, tall and lithe and regal. Her hair was the same color as her daughter's, elegantly styled with braiding and brooches. Just as Owen was about to reach the Dowager, he heard boots tromping into the sanctuary, loud and fervent and very familiar. Twisting around, he watched with horror as Ratcliffe strode into the sanctuary, his face contorted with anger. He marched straight toward Owen and looked as if he would jerk the boy's arm out of its socket and drag him out.
"Come here, boy,"
the Queen Mother said to Owen, her voice soft but urgent. Owen's legs were shaking violently, but he managed to close the gap separating him from the Queen Mother as the burly man continued his approach. The cap was off Ratcliffe's head, crushed in his fist, and his balding dome looked moist with sweat. He was livid but also flushed with relief to have found Owen.
"There you are, young man," he barked angrily in a clipped tone.
He closed the distance with several long strides, attracting the gaze of everyone in the room, which made Owen cower against the Queen Mother's gown. She put her hand on his shoulder, and he saw the glittering jewel of the coronation ring on her hand.
"This is supposed to be a quiet sanctuary, Ratcliffe," the Queen Mother chastised. "Please, you will offend the fountain. Lower your voice."
His teeth gnashed in fury.
"I should have known he would seek refuge here."
"What are you raving about?" she answered patiently. "This boy? I have never seen him before in my life. Who is he?"
"Owen Kiscadden,"
Ratcliffe snarled.
"The king's hostage."
The queen laughed lightly.
"Ah, your anger makes sense now. I was beginning to think you had lost your wits.
You think I summoned him here?"
"He is standing before you, isn't he?"
Ratcliffe said, raising his voice.
"How did you manage it, Lizzie? I truly wish to know."
Owen could tell that the name he used was meant as an insult by the way she bridled her reaction.
"Obviously the fountain led the boy here, Ratcliffe. I heard he was in the palace, of course, but I did not bring him here. We had not even met until just a moment ago. But I will remind you, sir, that he has the protection of sanctuary and you cannot force him to leave. Severn wouldn't dare violate it. Not after all he has done. The people would revolt. Somehow the boy managed to find his way here, and here he will stay. Under my protection."
Ratcliffe looked as if he would have a seizure of anger.
"The king will not tolerate this," he growled. Can the fountain shield you from his wrath? Your daughter enjoys the privilege of coming back and forth. Shall she become his hostage instead?
Owen's heart quailed at the words, fearing what would happen to the princess. He gave the queen a worried look. She laughed scornfully.
You and I both know he wouldn't do that. Now be gone, Ratcliffe. Before I call for the sexton, out.
Ratcliffe's fists trembled with fury. He looked at Owen then, his eyes full of daggers.
Come with me, boy. Now, come back with me to the castle.
Owen stared at the man and shook his head.
When the king finds out about this,
Ratcliffe snarled, his lips quivering.
It appears he already has,
came a voice from the doorway. It was the Deaconius, attended by the sexton.
He is mounting the steps right now, Lord Ratcliffe. The king is here.
He turned and bowed graciously.
Welcome to Our Lady, Sovereign Lord.
Owen's eyes widened with terror, and he felt the queen's hand tighten on his shoulder.
No matter what he says, do not let him touch you,
the queen whispered in warning. Chapter 9. The King's Voice. The king was annoyed. Owen could see that emotion burning in his gray eyes, twisting his mouth into a scowl and twitching in his cheek muscle. The limp from his wound was becoming less pronounced, but it was still there, and Owen could hear the distinct sound of his shuffling steps before he saw his face. The king wore his black and gold. The usual dagger was in his belt, accompanied by a large scabbarded sword that had seen many years of war. A trickle of sweat fell down the side of his face. His long black hair was windswept, giving him a wild appearance. The Queen Mother's nails dug into Owen's shoulder, making him flinch.
Remember,
she whispered to Owen.
My liege,
Ratcliffe said with astonishment.
How come you this way? I was going to send word for you. When, Ratcliffe? When my hair turned gray? You thought I would not want to know that my hostage had fled? Why is it that I must learn these things from my niece rather than from the head of the espion?
The king's wrath was focused on Ratcliffe at the moment, but Owen felt his blood turn cold with fear, knowing it would turn on him.
My lord, Ratcliffe stammered. It was my man who told me the boy was here. I had only just learned of it and wanted to confirm the news with my own eyes first.
Ratcliffe wrung his hands, looking as if he feared for his neck.
Enough excuses, Ratcliffe. Is it too much to ask you to keep my hostages under closer supervision? What will I learn next? That you approved one of his parents' ceaseless requests to see him? By the fountain, man! He's just a little boy. How could you be so careless? I...
Ratcliffe's cheeks were scarlet, and sweat dribbled down them from his brow. The king made a dismissive gesture with a gloved hand. Then he turned his baleful eyes on the queen mother. His lips pursed angrily.
I should have suspected I would find him here, madame.
The hatred in his eyes and tone made Owen shrink.
You are quite mistaken, Severn, as you typically are when you're upset,
the Queen Mother replied in an icy voice.
I did not summon the lad here. He only just appeared. I haven't even spoken to him yet.
The king snorted in disbelief.
You take me for a fool.
I take you for one when you act like one. This is the Kiskadden lad, then? Your hostage?
There was a shade of meaning in her words that Owen did not understand.
And he found his way to Sanctuary. My, but how that must gall you.
The king's expression hardened. It was clear there was no love between the king and his sister-in-law, and Owen could sense the bitterness that had festered between them.
"You cannot take him from here, Severn. Even you have never dared to violate the sanctuary of Our Lady. You've threatened it, to be sure. But the people would throw you into the river if you tried, and you'd never survive. The boy stays here with me. I did not send for him, but I will not send him away."
She patted Owen's shoulder possessively.
"The lad does not know you as well as I do,"
the king said with husky anger.
"Nor you, my liege," she sneered. "He and I will have great fun together, discussing many things about your lordship and about my sons."
The king held up a hooked finger, silencing her. His face turned pale with anger and warning.
"You will say nothing,"
he said in a choked growl. Something peculiar happened then. It was as if the lapping sound of the fountain water had suddenly grown louder, drowning out all other sounds from Owen's ears. The sensation was soothing, and it began to calm his violently beating heart. Then the king's voice slipped in among the waters.
"Owen."
Usually there was a sharp edge to the king's voice when he spoke Owen's name, but this time his voice did not sound angry or accusing. It contained all the tenderness of a loving father's address to his son. He blinked, confused, and peered up at the king. The sound of the fountain waters grew even louder. He could feel them, as if he were splashing in the waters inside the stone railing. In fact, that's what it felt like he was doing, playing and splashing and getting wet and relishing in the deliciousness of being naughty. The feeling of the waters rushed through him, soothing him and calming him and filling him with happiness. He was smiling now. The king was smiling too, as if he felt the same thrill of dancing in a fountain.
"Come away from her, Owen,"
the king said softly, coaxingly.
"She is here for a reason. She plots and she destroys. If you heed her, lad, your family will be killed because of her. I want to save you, Owen. Come with me."
Owen felt a twinge of pain in his shoulder, but it could not hurt him, not truly. He heard words, the queen's words, but they could not pierce the rushing sound of the waters. A memory tried to intrude, something about the king's touch, but it was as annoying as a buzzing fly, and he brushed it away.
"I would not lie to you,"
the king said seriously, gently, as if he were inviting a butterfly to land on his palm.
"There is danger here, danger you cannot see. You are being trapped in a spider's web, Owen. Let me free you. Come, hold my hand."
The king reached out his black glove. The leather looked soft and warm, the gesture so inviting. Owen shook loose the queen's hand and walked toward the king. It felt as if the very waters of the fountain were coming from that outstretched hand. He knew without a doubt that he would feel safe and protected if he held the king's hand. More words fluttered around him. Some were sharp-spoken, but they could not pierce the feelings flooding him. He walked confidently over to the king, who did not look fearsome anymore. He looked tired and pained, but he had a gentle, generous smile.
"My niece is so worried about you,"
the king said with a warm smile.
"Shall we give her a little surprise, then? She looked so fearful when she believed you had come to harm Owen. Shall we find her back at the palace?"
Owen smiled eagerly and nodded. Yes, he would like that. He would like that very much.
"Will you show her how you left the castle, Owen? We were all so surprised you were clever enough to figure it out. But I knew you were a smart lad from the start.
Owen nodded again, anxious to reveal the secret door to Princess Elise. Perhaps it would be their secret now. His heart was giddy as he finally reached out and took the king's hand. With one touch, it was as if he were transported onto a boat, floating away on calm waters. It was the first time he had felt safe since leaving Tatton Hall. Together, Owen and the king walked away from the queen and the bubbling fountain. The boy felt lightheaded with happiness as he clung to the king's hand, feeling its strong grip, the warmth of the leather. Owen turned back to the queen. She was crying. Why? He waved back at her, nodding to tell her all was well. Then he looked down at the black and white tiles on the floor. He only stepped on the white ones. The king only stepped on the black ones. It was as if they were wiser pieces, he thought, and the notion made him giggle.
What amuses you, Owen?
The king asked kindly. His voice inspired confidence. The squares, the boy said, pointing with his other hand. The white and the black. Like a wiser board. It did not dawn on him that this was the first time he had addressed the king. He felt so comfortable with him now, it seemed as if they had always been the best of friends.
You play wiser?
The king asked with a surprised chuckle. My father taught me.
I also play wiser,
the king said as they walked.
The game came from the Eastern Kingdoms. Did you know that?
They approached the huge doors of the sanctuary. It came from Shandigarh.
I knew you were a clever lad. Would you like a wiser board, Owen? I can have one carved for you.
He stared up at the king's thoughtful face in rapture.
Would you? He pleaded. I've never had my own board.
Then you shall have one,
the king promised.
If you stay in the castle. You must stay in the castle, Owen.
The boy nodded. It would be worth it if he got his own wiser board. They left the sanctuary and walked toward the outer gates. Owen saw the reflecting pool and wondered where the fat man was. Mancini. He would have liked to have shared the muffin and watched him throw crumbs to the pigeons again. A throb of fear nudged his heart. Even though the sun was beating down on them, he felt cold. He adjusted his grip on the king's hand, but the leather did not feel as soft anymore. It was almost as if the king were clenching his hand. It was almost uncomfortable. The king's limp grew more pronounced as they walked. Owen overheard a stifled gasp of pain and looked up to see the king glaring at the gates, his teeth clenched as if he were concentrating very hard. The murmuring sound of the fountains began to recede. It felt as if he had been caught playing in the fountains and was about to get in trouble for doing so. A guilty feeling welled up inside his stomach. Something was wrong. They reached the gate, and the sanctuary men parted, allowing them room to pass. Owen looked up at the tall stone arch, then glanced back at the sanctuary. Ratcliffe was just behind them, scowling at him with raw anger and humiliation that made him even more uneasy. The sexton stood by the gate.
"Do you leave of your own free will?"
he asked Owen sternly. The boy nodded, feeling frightened by the man's stern look. The bad feelings ebbed as the king shifted his grip on his hand. Nothing had changed. The king made him feel safe, and he wanted his own carved wiser board and to see Princess Elise. What else truly mattered? He sidled up closer to the king.
You heard the boy,
the king said with a suppressed groan. Owen's heart was beating faster now. They walked out the gate together, still hand in hand. Something made Owen glance back once more. And this time he saw the fat man standing by Ratcliffe, taking coins from his hand. Maybe Mancini was paying Ratcliffe to get him some muffins, but that did not make sense.
Ratcliffe!
The king barked. They were outside the gate now and had started toward the castle. Owen's heart was like thunder in his chest.
Why was he leaving the sanctuary? Why had he come there in the first place? There had been a reason, and it seemed important, but he just could not remember it.
Take him back to the palace,
the king said, sounding breathless.
I need to rest. It drained me. The lad has a strong will, thick as tree roots.
I envy your gifts, my lord,
Ratcliffe said tautly, joining them. He seized Owen's other hand, tightening his grip until it was painful. Then the king released Owen, and the fog was gone. Owen remembered everything, like a sleepwalker awakened mid-step. Confusion and terror battled within him.
No need to flatter, Ratcliffe.
The king chuckled.
I can't abide flattery. I know what I am. And so do you. Keep this boy under better watch, or I promise you that there will be a new espion master, and you will be sent to the north to polish Horwath's boots. I expected better from you, Dickon. If I can't trust you in the little things...
He let the threat dangle and then gestured dismissively at them both. Ratcliffe flushed scarlet again, his jaw clenching with rage.
Come on!
He snarled, yanking Owen's arm so hard it felt like his shoulder would come popping out. Owen was near tears as he watched the sanctuary of Our Lady start to fade away. He realized, sickeningly, that he had made it there on his own, against all odds, but had been lured out again by some trick. He had been incapable of resisting the king. But why? Then he remembered the queen's warning, and it struck him. It was the king's voice. It was something in his hands. Owen had been incapable of resisting. While they were halfway across the bridge, Owen tried to struggle away from Ratcliffe's hand, wrenching and twisting, anything to free himself so he could flee back to the sanctuary. A sharp smack on the back of his head put a stop to his resistance.
Think, boy,
Ratcliffe snarled in his ear.
Think about your family.
He tugged Owen around until he was facing him and then lowered himself down to his height. The head of the espion spoke softly, but his voice was full of venom.
You cross me again, and they will suffer for it. You escape one more time, and I will have your mother and your sisters thrown into the dungeons to starve, and your father and brothers into the river to drown. I will not chase you or hunt you ever again, boy. You will obey me, or the blood of your family will be on your scrawny little head. It will turn that white patch red. Make a fool of me again, and you will regret it. Am I understood?
Owen trembled with shock and fright.
Say it!
Ratcliffe barked. Owen's mouth would not work.
Say it!
Ratcliffe warned, squeezing his hand until he cried out.
Yes!
Owen wailed, crumpling to the ground in agony.
There is an adage as old as time, but it is universally true. No good deed goes unpunished. In finding Kiskaden's brat, I have been relocated to the palace to keep an eye on the little devil. I spent several years in the palace before, and I hated it. This assignment will, in all likelihood, be very short. The boy is either going to get himself killed, or his parents will do something reckless to seal his fate. I'm not sentimental about this, and I only hope it happens quickly so I can move on to a more interesting assignment. The only patch of blue in the sky, as they say, is the lad likes to play in the kitchen. I hear Leona can spice and cook a goose like no other.
Dominique Mancini, Espion of the Palace Kitchen. Chapter 10. Anchoret. In the days that followed Owen's escape, it seemed as if the sun had stopped shining. The little boy had been petted and coddled before. Now he was shunned and scolded. Mona Sterling was replaced with a stern old woman by the name of Jewel, who did not suffer him to explore the grounds,
was too gouty to climb tower steps or walk the corridors with him more than once a day, and kept him on a short leash, predominantly in the kitchen, where a new addition had soured the haven. Owen was surprised to find Mancini had taken up residence in the palace. Leona had explained in hushed tones that the man was a spy for the king, part of the espion, and that he had been stationed at the palace to keep an eye on Owen. And so Leona and Drew had withdrawn their tenderness, fearful that the king would discover their role in Owen's escape. Mancini said very little to Owen, but he gave him knowing little smirks and winks that seemed almost threatening, as if he were daring the boy to misbehave so he'd have an excuse to report him to Ratcliffe. Occasionally he'd stomp his boot suddenly, like he'd done with the pigeons, just to see Owen start. He would chuckle to himself while Owen stacked his tiles and snort derisively when they all came tumbling down, and he helped himself liberally to the kitchen food throughout the day. Owen could tell Leona resented having to feed such a big man so often, but there was naught she could do. Owen tried to find Princess Elise and failed, and she made no attempt to contact him either. It was as if everything good and kind had been banished from the palace after Owen's escape attempt. His wretched heart became a constant torment, and the palace itself felt like a dungeon. After several days of scolding from Jewel, he shrunk inside himself, his appetite waned, and he started at every shadow. Owen's misery during the king's breakfast grew exquisite. No longer was he spared the king's enmity. On the third day after the botched escape, the king looked almost gleeful as he entered the great hall and advanced on Owen.
"What? Still here, Master Owen?"
he said mockingly. He gripped his dagger hilt with his fist and loosed it from its scabbard before slamming it back down, the gesture Owen had always found horrifying.
"It has been days since my entire household has been frantically searching for you. You cannot imagine what a bother that is in such a spacious fortress as this one. And since then, my kitchen expenses have begun to soar. You have my thanks."
Owen shrank from the attention, too frightened to say anything. Dunsdworth coughed a laugh into his fist, which he should not have done, because the king turned upon him with delight.
"Shut it, Dunsdworth!"
the king snapped.
"If I wanted your commentary, I would beat it out of you."
It was only a cough,"
Dunsdworth objected in a whiny tone.
"Well then, keep your coughs and your sneezes and your bad airs within, lad. If there was anyone in this hall I wanted to escape, it would be you."
The young man went scarlet with anger and mortification, and Owen could not hide a smile of revenge. Unfortunately, Dunsdworth turned to look at him at that exact moment. The look on his face promised such revenge that the smile cleared away in a blink. The king hastily ate his breakfast, picking from the trays that others had already sampled. Owen surreptitiously studied the king's face as he put his guests down and made them squirm. He seemed satisfied with the contention he brewed at every meal, as if it fed him more than Leona's fare. After breakfast, Owen started making his way to the kitchen, but a strong arm closed around his neck from behind. The air vanished from his lungs, and a heavy weight crushed against him.
"Laugh at me? Who are you to laugh at anyone?"
Dunsdworth's voice was low and rough in his ear. A punch to his stomach made him gasp, and he could not breathe. The arm was still choking him.
"You are doomed, Kiski,"
Dunsdworth jibed.
"If you ever laugh at me again, I'll drown you in a barrel of wine. I would be doing the king a favor. You hear me, boy? I'll push you in a wine barrel and hammer down the lid. Don't you ever laugh at me."
After delivering another punch to the stomach, he threw Owen to the floor where the boy started to sob. Dunsdworth kicked Owen's arm with his sharp boot, and Owen knew it would leave a huge bruise. He held his stomach, staining the tiles with his tears as the older boy sauntered away. For a few moments, Owen soothed himself by imagining ways to get revenge,
But soon even his fiery anger cooled, and he knelt in a passageway, shuddering and trembling as servants passed by him, no one stopping to see what was wrong. When Owen managed to stumble into the kitchen, no one noticed him except Mancini, who queried if there were any goodies left in the great hall to pluck. Owen nodded, and he was gone. The boy retreated to his corner and sat there in the shadows, his back to the rest of the kitchen, his shoulders slumped, too sad even to stack tiles from his satchel. It took him a moment to notice the scattered tiles waiting for him there. Tears hung thick on his lashes as he edged nearer. Instead of spelling his name, the tiles spelled W-A-I-T. It was a curious message from Drew, but it did not interest him. He suddenly missed his parents dreadfully. No one had ever thrashed him before. His arm throbbed from the kick, and he rubbed it, but the pain did not lessen. Maybe his arm was broken. No one would care if it were. How had the king talked him into leaving the sanctuary? His memory was a blur. He only remembered how persuasive the king had been, how kind and generous he had seemed. Somehow he had tricked Owen. The boy did not understand how, but he knew it had happened. He gritted his teeth, brushing his tears away on his sleeve. The day seemed to pass away in a blur, and he obeyed the message that had been left with the tiles. He sat and waited, and did not eat any food. He did not think he would ever be hungry again. Even when Leona tried to coax him to eat a muffin, he only shook his head.
"By all means, give it to me then, Leona," Mancini said with a laugh. "The boy's not hungry. The man is."
The butler, Berwick, snorted.
"You've eaten as much as 16 men,"
he complained darkly in his northern accent.
"Your appetite is going to bankrupt the king." "Your complaining is going to bankrupt my patience,"
Mancini shot back.
"If you had the brains the fountain gave a sheep, you'd know it's not wise to stand between a fat, hungry man and his food. I could eat you, Berwick."
The butler snorted angrily at the reproof, but Mancini was always joking, and no one seemed to pay him any mind.
"He clearly doesn't want the muffin, Leona."
Mancini continued his campaign for more food, beckoning with his sausage-like fingers.
"Bring it over."
The cook looked pleadingly at Owen, begging him to take it, but he would not.
"See, I told you the lad wasn't hungry today, and it is certainly a sin to let a muffin go to waste."
Leona almost threw it at him, but he took it greedily and ate it with little mumbles of relish that sickened Owen.
"I am Genovese,"
he said, spitting a few crumbs as he spoke to no one in particular.
"And I am not ashamed of it. We love our food. This is the height of deliciousness. I applaud you, morsel. If there are any more, Leona."
She gave him a disgusted look and did not reply. Owen was too tired and hurt to do much that day. He obeyed when Jewel came for him and did as he was told in a listless way. Even her suggestion of reading in the library was met with refusal. He just wanted to sit in the kitchen, to smell the baking bread and try to recapture his memories of Tatton Hall. But his life there was so different from his present reality that the memories were slipping away, dissolving into the air like smoke. He lay down on the warm stone tiles, pressing his cheek against them, and thought about his parents and his siblings. He tried to remember the carefree days he'd spent reading in the library and ambling around the grounds. He might have fallen asleep there. He dazed and dozed, drifting in and out of consciousness. Sometimes snatches of words, mumbled softly nearby, would linger close enough that he could grab them.
"Poor dear. He misses home," Leona murmured.
"The king is a cruel man. Do you think he will kill the boy?"
Drew asked.
"He killed his nephews. The man has no qualms."
"Carry him to bed, Drew. It's getting late."
"Let him sleep, Leona. Let him dream of better days. I'll come by early in the morning and carry him to his room.
They left him in the kitchen. The clinking of pots and spoons ended. Mancini grunted as he hiked up the steps. Soon all was peaceful and quiet and warm. Owen's arm throbbed painfully when he turned over on his shoulder. He blinked, feeling some of his mussed hair tickle his forehead. They had all gone. The windows showed the black night sky, and he saw the outline of the knife blade tower and a single light coming from the upper window. It looked like a star. He sat up and listened to the deep quiet. It was vast and penetrating. An occasional sound, like the sloughing of ash in the oven, came like a whisper. Owen's heart was a painful thing, almost as sore as his bruised arm.
"I don't want to die,"
he whispered into the stillness. There was a grating sound, so soft he almost did not hear it. It took Owen a moment to place it as the sound of polished stone scuffing stone. Then a woman entered the kitchen from a shadowed recess nearby, where the tiles had awaited him with their cryptic message. She was dressed in a pale gray cloak that seemed to match the color of the stone wall. The cowl was up, concealing her face, so he only caught a glimpse of her hair. His heart started to beat faster. She was slightly taller than Princess Elise, and for a brief moment Owen thought she might be a ghost. Then her arms lifted to lower the cowl, revealing a long coil of dark hair that was pinned up around her head like a crown, with a single braid coming down and draped across her shoulder. A thin necklace with a brooch hung at the base of her throat. Her elbow-length gloves matched her gown, a light satin texture that was silver and fashionable. She stood still for a moment, listening to the silence, wrapped in the velvety darkness of night.
"Owen,"
she whispered softly. His heart beat even faster. He swallowed, afraid but hopeful. She knew his name. She was looking for him. It suddenly dawned on him that Drew was not the one who had been leaving him messages with the tiles after all. He shifted on the floor, and her head turned in response to the little noise, her braid slipping down her back. Though he was half hidden by shadows in the dark corner, that small sound was all it had taken to capture her attention. Aside from the fire embers, only the moon lit the kitchen. She walked gracefully toward him, and as she came closer, he realized she was beautiful. She was neither as young as the princess nor as old as the queen. Though he could not tell the color of her eyes in the darkness, they were light, like moonbeams, either gray or blue or green, and so very sad. She absent-mindedly reached for the braid and began to tease the tips with her fingers. Then she let it rest across her front again, barely touching the laced bodice. She slowly sat on the bench that separated them, resting her hands in her lap in a non-threatening way. He thought she was the most beautiful person he had ever seen. As she studied him, the little frown on her mouth smoothed into a small smile, a welcoming one.
"Hello, Owen," she said.
Her voice was just loud enough for him to hear her.
"Thank you for waiting for me. I am here to help you. The Queen sent me."
She sat still, waiting for him to respond, waiting to see how he would react to her presence. Owen was not sure what he should feel. Her sense of majesty put him a little in mind of the Queen herself. She was quiet, her manners very subdued, almost as if she were shy. To his relief, she neither rushed him nor pressured him to reply. She simply waited for him to gather his courage. It took a few moments for his mouth to work, but it did, which surprised him.
"Are you a ghost?"
The smile broadened, amused by his question. She had a pretty smile, with just the hint of a dimple.
No, she answered. Would you like me to introduce myself?
He nodded solemnly, feeling more at ease with her quiet manners.
My name is Anchorette Trinioe. That's a strange name, isn't it? But it is my name. I am the Queen's poisoner. She sent me to help you.
Too many people are frightened. They want youth to last. They complain bitterly if sickness comes, but the world is always in tumult, and fortunes rise and fall and fail. It is the ambitious who accomplish things. It takes courage to be ambitious, for never was anything great achieved without risk. I wish to become the head of the Espeon. There. I've written it down. A goal not written down is merely a wish.
Dominique Mancini, Espeon of the Palace Kitchen. Chapter 11. The Fountain. Anchorette was so quiet, so subdued, that Owen was not as frightened of her as he was of most strangers. But he was not quite sure if being a poisoner wasn't worse than being a ghost.
"Do you have any questions?"
she asked him softly.
"What is a poisoner?"
She seemed to have anticipated the question, and it did not trouble her.
"Every prince in every realm has enemies, Owen. These enemies try to take away his crown. Being a prince is very dangerous business, you know."
She paused.
"A poisoner's job is to protect the ruler from his enemies. Sometimes there are dangerous men who need to be stopped. I know how to mix potions that can make someone very sick. Sometimes that is enough to stop the danger. Sometimes I must make a potion that kills."
She glanced down at her hands in her lap.
"I don't like doing that, but sometimes it must be done."
Her voice was so soft and sad.
"You said you were the Queen's poisoner," Owen said.
"You mean the Queen at Our Lady?"
"Yes." "Do you live in the sanctuary then?" "No, I live here in the palace."
She pointed through the upper window to the spark in the knife blade tower.
"Up there, in that tower."
Owen's eyes widened.
"I thought that's where the king lived."
She smiled again.
"No, his back is crooked. It would be too difficult for him to climb the steps every day."
She sat quietly, patiently, looking at him and waiting for more questions.
"Why don't you serve the new king?"
he asked.
"I'm glad the queen sent you to help me, but she isn't the queen anymore." "That's a very good question, Owen. I will try to explain so you can understand. When King Eridur died, I was not here. He had sent me on a secret mission to another kingdom. Some terrible things happened while I was gone, and the king's brother claimed the throne. He knew about me, but he did not know who I was. I was very loyal to his brother, not to him, you see. He sent men to try and kill me, but I killed them instead."
She paused, looking down at her hands.
"He does not like me very much."
Owen looked at her gloved hands and then at the brooch at her throat.
"Does he think you are going to poison him?"
he asked. He remembered that the king ate only from dishes that had already been sampled by others. She gave him that little smile again.
"You are very smart for one so young. Yes, he is afraid I'm going to poison him. But I would never hurt children to stop him. You never need fear that, Owen. I only hurt dangerous men. You went to the queen for help, and so she asked me to help you."
"But you can't help me," he said, shaking his head.
"If I leave King Fountain, my parents will be killed. I must stay here."
She nodded encouragingly.
You're right. You must stay here for now. But I have been giving this some thought. I'm very good at thinking, Owen.